What was it like for you when you did your first cremation?
Oh, that was something. I mean, the first day I was there, they took me on a tour. The owner's son, who himself isn't an undertaker, but was working, as most kids do, you know, at dad's place of business off and on, showed me around, showed me where the arrangement room is, and showed me the two retorts, which is what they call the cremation ovens. Look like big Soviet-era pizza ovens, floor-to-ceiling things. Pretty intimidating. Each one with a little porthole in its door so you can observe and watch what's going on and tend to your cremation. They were like these flaming evil eyes in the middle of a monster face.
Yeah.
These are industrial machines, and but they're very efficient at what they do. The first cremation I was involved in, certainly I had to learn. It's not just like popping a cake in the oven. You have to deal with gas flow and air flow and tend to your cremation so that it's done cleanly and efficiently and without creating too much smoke, because, frankly, nobody likes to see black smoke belching out of the chimney of a crematorium. It's just a little bit too much reality.
As an undertaker in training, you had to search for certain devices that were on the body to make sure that that didn't go in to the retort.
There is a routine, because most of the dead that we processed on any given day were very old people, and maybe that's gives you a sense of how it is. I can report through anecdotal evidence that most people are very old when they die. A lot of people have heart pacemakers or defibrillators, and part of the routine is to frisk them down and make sure that to see if they actually have one. It feels like about the size of a wooden matchbox under the skin and the chest. That has to come out before the body goes in to the retort, because those things will blow up. They won't blow up the building, but they'll do enough damage to the inside of the retort to require it to be fixed. Or if you happen to be peering in through the porthole to tend to the cremation, you know, it could injure the cremationist. So those things have to come out. You have to cut them out.
Yeah, and I'm going to read here from part of your book Curtains here, as you talk about the goal is in the end to have a white powder. It's part of Neil's brand, the guy you work for, Neil's brand, having the whitest cremated remains in Winnipeg. What's this, I say, poking at a hard green glob the size of a pencil eraser. I don't know, but every cremation, we get one or two. And without evidence to the contrary, right, I decide it must be the soul. Tell me about that little green glob. What was it, really, any idea what that is? That pops
well, out? You know, the process of the sort, not every funeral home or crematorium does it, but Neil decided that, yeah, this was important to his brand, because part of the thing that he was encouraging people to do is, if they didn't have an idea of what to do with the cremated remains, he maintained a rose garden, a scattering garden out the front. And his theory was, backed up by plant scientists, although it's not without its dispute, that the human cremated remains are good for growing plants like roses. And so he wanted them pure, and he thought it was an aesthetic issue too. Nobody likes gray cremated remains. I myself thought, I'm not sure people have really strong opinions about the color of their cremated remains, but I'll go along with this.
Right.
The point of the hand sort is, you're taking out that which is not human and processing that which is. And some people have artificial hips or knees. You know, we pass a big heavy magnet through the remains as we set them to cool on a big steel table to pull out, you know, staples from the casket or screws or surgical implants, surgical staples, zippers from the clothing, buttons, all that. Bits of stone from the retort wall. I always found these little green things, hard, almost like plastic. And I asked the cremationist, who'd been doing this for 20 years, what it was, and he just shrugged. I don't know, but we get them all the time. And sure enough, they did. So that's the conclusion I came to.
That it's the soul.
It's the soul. Because nobody had a decent explanation for where that stuff comes from. You'd love to hear from somebody if they know.
Either that or the alien implant theory. So I'll
What? Maybe. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that either. If that's the case, then everybody has one.
Everybody's
there's one. There's the confirmation of what we all knew all along.
There was that story you tell of a 600-pound man that had to be cremated. And that almost like turned into an ecological disaster. It seemed like it was teetering on the brink of being the China syndrome or something. We're going to see Three Mile Island meltdown. Talk about that.
Well, you know, this is a current reality. People are getting bigger and bigger, and they die, and they have to be buried or cremated. I certainly know of. There's a couple of companies. That produce caskets, oversized caskets for really large folks. And when it comes to cremation, there are limits to what standard retorts can handle. This fellow that we cremated was probably about 500, 600 pounds, and the family were not in a position to buy a customized oversized casket. So the funeral director from a small town in Manitoba, built one himself, which I thought was an amazing gesture. You know, he didn't even charge for it. He took some pine wood and in his workshop created this oversized box with yellow rope handles so that the body could be delivered to the crematorium with some dignity. But believe me, opening that back door of the hearse and seeing that box that he made, and thinking there's a body in there, this thing was, floor of the casket to the roof of the, floor of the hearse to the roof,
right.
And just as wide, that was a big box. When it comes time to cremating, of course, you're talking about an immense amount of stored energy in fat. And the guy I worked with who has years of experience at this basically kept a fire extinguisher handy because he didn't know where it was going to go. And I found myself moving closer and closer and closer to the back door of the crematorium as the temperature rose and we could actually start to see fire lipping out underneath the door of the retorts, you know, the big sliding door.
Right.
I stood out in the parking lot and watched. It was at nighttime. We did this cremation at nighttime, and I could see through the chimney coming out of the crematorium this amazing light show, sparks and blue flames as you would get out of a jet engine. And it was both startling and oddly beautiful. It was as if this guy was giving off a second life in flames and sparks. Had us a little bit nervous that the whole door might get blown off, but in the end, things were under control, and it was quite something.